Hello everyone, and welcome to this home version of the Caravan Tour of Terror, a podcast where we tour the globe on a chilling, disturbing, had this in my head right before, venture round the world of horror movies. But this week, we are back in Glasgow, as the Glasgow Fright Fest was in town. Unfortunately, my driver was unavailable for this, so I've pulled in our resident music maker. You may know him from the intro and outro from this podcast. It's Mr. Michael Maftian.
Hello, and a good day, and thank you for having me.
Delighted to have you. Long overdue. And yeah, you joined us this year for the Fright Fest. This was your first one.
Yes, absolutely.
And we'll just start with overall. Like, what did you think of the experience of sitting in a cramped theatre for 2 days?
Well, because I was in a cramped theatre for 2 days, but surrounded by a bunch of like-minded, fantastic horror lovers like myself, It was definitely a fantastic experience. This is also my first overall Fright Fest.
Yep.
So it was just a nice big overall experience. But doing it in Glasgow, where, you know, I've really enjoyed living and getting to know the people, was special in its own way. And overall, I think it was definitely successful. And I'll definitely be back next year, for sure.
That's what I like to hear. Need more people on that, buying tickets, filling out that theatre. We were Friday and Saturday, five movies on the Friday, six movies on the Saturday. And yeah, we started at 1 p.m. on the Friday with The Soul Eater, which if you've ever listened to our Fright Fest episodes before, I will run through the blurb on the Fright Fest website, as that's what we were given right before we went into the movie. So, The Soul Eater, directed by Julien Mori and Alexander Bustillo. Probably butchered both of those names. But two detectives with entirely different work methods are sent to the sleepy French mountain town of Réquenard. Definitely butchered that one. One is investigating a series of gruesome deaths. The other is searching for some missing local children. Soon they realise their cases are connected by an old folklore legend of a malevolent creature, the terrifying incarnation of the Soul Eater. From co-directors who, as a part of the vanguard of French extreme cinema, brought you Inside, Livid, Among the Living, and The Deep House. Now they unleash their most devilish and sinister creation yet to shock, horrify, and surprise. So yeah, this was a... this one kind of gave me kind of like True Detective vibes.
Yeah, very much.
It was very a gritty, like kind of cop drama for a lot of it, with horror elements. I thought that the performances were very well done.
Yeah.
And one thing I will say is there's kids in this one, particularly two main children, and child actors can be so hit or miss. And I thought these kids did a very good job of kind of just bringing across that kind of absolute terror, that fear that was needed to portray to actually make this movie work, because it is about missing kids and
right.
Things like that. But yeah, what was your thoughts on our first movie?
You know, I thought it was definitely a good opener. I think that it definitely laid just a good overall foundation for what Fright Fest was going to be. It had its ups, it had its downs. It had a lot of moments where I was thinking to myself, this is heading in one specific direction. And I was pleasantly surprised that it didn't always head that direction. From time to time, I did feel like it was a bit disjointed.
Yep, yep.
But I think overall, it still laid a pretty good story out overall. And I think that it's probably in the top five somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree with you. It was definitely a good opener. When you're about to sit down to 11 movies, you want something to set that tone. And starting off on a weak movie can really put a damper on what you're going to see next.
Right.
But this one, it didn't like blow me away, but it definitely was a good watch, a good kind of mood setter for the rest of it. I will say that the wonderful organisers of Fright Fest, who put on a fantastic show every year, they do have a habit of comparing some of the movies to other movies before we watch them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this one, they said, if you liked Martyrs, you'll enjoy this. And I definitely did not get a Martyrs vibe from this.
I haven't even seen Martyrs.
So Martyrs is a very, very gruesome, it's a raw watch. It is a tough watch. Another French movie as well, much like this one. That is extreme cinema, extreme horror. And this one, I don't think hits extreme.
No, definitely not an extreme horror by any means.
Yeah, it goes a couple of silly places from time to time. But overall, yeah, I found this was a really decent watch. I enjoyed it. I got quite a bit out of it. It did really well visually.
Oh yeah, actually the cinematography was fantastic.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, a lot of really really good shots. A really great mood setting.
Some good drone footage as well of the road being shot from up high. That quintessential kind of isolated feeling, yet also at the same time in a wide open space, definitely kind of gives it that specific element.
Yeah, because it talks about it being a sleepy French mountain town, and those drone shots really set that.
Yeah,
of that kind of isolation, that kind of barrenness, at least in terms of people. The two main leads, I thought did a really good job.
Good performances.
Yeah. So overall, I've in terms of score, I'm kind of swithering between a 6 and a 7, but probably leaning more to a 7. Mm. I it's got its faults. It's nothing that I would really search out and watch over and over, but I did enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm kind of right there with you as well.
Yeah, about a 7 for you.
6.
6 for you.
Yeah,
just didn't quite hit that 7.
Yeah, just, I don't know. I'm also, I don't really give perfect scores.
Yeah, the perfect 7, as people often say.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's fair. The thing is, a 6 is still a positive score.
Oh, absolutely.
It's still, a good movie. So after that, we went straight into movie 2. 325 was The Deep Dark, directed by Matthew Turi. From Matthew Turi, director of Meander and Hostile, not Hostel, the Eli Roth movie.
Right.
Comes an award-winning creature feature taking you on a deep, dark voyage to the edge of limitless, horrific imagination. It's 1856, and in the historic coal mines of northern France, a group of miners find themselves trapped in the subterranean depths after a cave-in. But they soon realise they're not alone. Decades later, veteran miner Roland is forced by management to accompany Professor Berthier underground to take samples and measurements. A sudden landslide prevents them from surfacing, and they too must face the ancient mutant that constantly craves blood.
Mm-hmm.
The Deep Dark, our second French movie, but I do feel that it had quite a lot of Turkish themes. Obviously, our kind of focal character is a Turkish migrant worker. You kind of see, not really delving in too much into spoilers, but you see him back in Turkey, struggling for money, and you have the Was it actually Turkey or was it Morocco? I know they are nowhere near each other, but now that I'm talking about it, but yeah, you see him in his home country.
I think it was Morocco.
I actually think it was Morocco.
Turkey was the funeral.
Yes, you're absolutely right. See, that's why I've got you here, to keep me right.
Right.
Yes, sorry, from Morocco. And yeah, so he's struggling for money under French rule. Yep. 1856, and you can see the kind of absolute disregard for the local population that kind of French government and French mining company have.
Yeah.
That it's just, you'll do. It doesn't matter that you're struggling, starving, whatever. We just need workers for our mines in France. And that really sets the tone for how he's received when he gets to France.
Yeah.
And the mining group is made up of a mixture of different nationalities. You've got Spanish, French, obviously, Moroccan, Italian, and they all have their kind of place in the team. And they're kind of, you can see the prejudices coming out very early on. This movie does not hold back on its blatant racism in its characters because it fits the tone of the time. It's not, I would not say that in any way it's done poorly. I think it all actually serves the story.
Yeah.
And that can be a hard thing to do.
And I did enjoy the fact that it was a bit of a ragtag group.
Yeah.
So that's really entertaining for me. I definitely enjoy kind of a mini ensemble type of cast. Everybody's in this together. A lot of questionable characters. Maybe not everybody really cares for each other. Maybe there are even some of them could potentially be enemies outside of the mine. However, in the mine, they're working together to just kind of deal with the situation. And I think that what this movie had that Soul Eater did not have is a comical element from time to time. There's two types of horror movies, in my opinion. There's a horror movie that doesn't really rely on any comedy at all, ever. It's very serious pretty much the whole time.
Yeah.
And then there's movies that have a bit of an underlying comical element, and I do believe that this one did.
Yeah, I generally...
Not saying it's comedy.
I would definitely agree. It's definitely not a horror comedy, but in general, I find it very difficult for movies to have, horror movies especially, to have an entire movie without any comedy.
Right.
And I always go to 28 Days Later as a prime example of why comedy is actually needed in horror.
Especially horror.
Because it brings... It allows those peaks and valleys and tension.
Yeah.
The moment I always go to in 28 Days Later is right after he's, squeezed the eyeballs out of the guy on the ground. He gets a book thrown at him and he's like, "Oh, what the fuck, man!" and that breaks up that horrifying moment, but also allows you to drop down before that shock at the end when he gets into the taxi.
Absolutely.
And to be able to keep up a movie without the person watching getting kind of emotionally exhausted, you need that comedy to bring those peaks and valleys, to allow you to drop that tension, to build it back up again.
Mm.
And I think The Deep Dark did that very well.
Absolutely.
Again, brilliant performances.
Really great performances.
I did love the head miner that I called French Dennis Quaid. he does a great job of
very
that.
Much so.
Looking back on it, yeah. I found he did a great job of that kind of stalwart old hand who really gives a shit about his team.
Yeah.
And it's not about, "Oh, well, this guy's a dick and this guy..." He is like, "These are my people. My job is to get them out alive."
Yep, exactly.
And it's first movie with a proper creature, which is done through practical effects.
Yep, absolutely.
And I will say, Not the best practical effects I've ever seen in my life.
No.
But I still 100% would prefer that over a CG monster.
Oh, any day. Any day of the week, yeah.
Even at moments, you know, the monster looks not laughable as in that terrible, but just kind of doesn't quite fit in. But see, once you adapt to that,
yeah,
it works perfectly.
Yep.
Like, I thought that monster was really cool in design and really fits that kind of atmosphere. And I much prefer any practical effects.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, like, you can do practical effects and touch up with CG. It happens all the time. Like, but I'd rather go down the Guillermo del Toro route than the Michael Bay route.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. And granted, I did choose the most polar opposites for that, but I think the point is pretty much there. So yeah, I enjoyed this. This, I would say, it was a step up from the Soul Eater.
Oh, big time.
For me, it's probably still a 7, but a high 7 for me. Like, it's. You know, when I refuse to drop into the 1 out of 100 ranking system. So, yes, you're limited to between 1 and 10.
Right, right. Actually, you know, now that I think about it, I do want to take my previous ranking, even though I fucking hate rankings, of the Soul Eater, and I think I'm going to drop that bastard down to a 5er.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Just, I don't know, though. What are we ranking? Are we ranking Fright Fest films?
No, we're just ranking. If you were, so, in terms of the way that we tend to rank them, it would be, I mean, Donald does it on IMDb, so he will rank movies so that you can kind of look back and see what he's ranked things.
I see.
And it is, it's not easy giving things a score.
Yeah, because I mean, honestly, especially with horror, movies that are a 5 are actually decent.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. I get that. For me, it's just ranking it on where it sits in my personal cadence.
Gotcha. Absolutely.
I'm not necessarily comparing it to any of these other movies, though that can be very difficult when you're watching 11 in a row.
That is true.
It is impossible to watch 11 movies and not compare the ones before and after.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So yeah, for me it's a 7. And I feel that since you dropped that down to a 5, that this is probably also a 7.
This is a high 6, I'd say.
A high 6? Yeah. Wow. Yeah, you're way harsher than
me. I'm talking about like a 6.8er.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, I really enjoyed this. It's an hour 40 and it uses that runtime well.
That is true.
I never felt this one dragged at all. The previous one was around 2 hours, and there were a couple moments where you're kind of like, come on.
Yep, no, agreed.
But yeah, Deep Dark's a fun watch.
Yeah.
Good creature feature, and you know, it's one of those ones where you're shooting in tunnels, so you're using your budget wisely.
Like,
you can put it where it's needed. And I think they do that great. And there's also a pony in it, so I'm happy.
That is true.
Yeah.
And the music is actually really good in it.
Yes.
It's actually, like, kind of Soul Eater soundtrack is forgettable.
Oh, yes, very much so.
But this one does a really good job. There's actual thematic elements to the movie as far as, you know, actual melody and things like that. But there's also really great moments of tension and release that happens in it, so that also plays into my rankings.
Oh, definitely. So, like, yeah. Obviously, due to your background, the music is going to play a bigger part than a lot of people, but definitely, like, this one uses its soundtrack a lot smarter than the Soul Eater does.
Yeah.
As you said, Soul Eater is very forgettable in terms of soundtrack.
Yeah, and if sometimes that's what it's meant to be, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, sometimes it's understated.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So,
I guess rather than forgettable, understated.
I mean, sometimes they can cross over. That Venn diagram can sometimes
very
overlap.
True.
We move on to 6 p.m. on the Friday. We have The Invisible Raptor, directed by Mike Hermosa. And as far as I'm aware, was written and starring Mike Capes. With a little appearance from Sean Astin, and just bringing her absolute scenery chewing best was Sandy Martin, best known for playing Charlie, Mac's mum, in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Mm. She just steals any scene she's in.
Oh, yeah.
She's just hilarious. So this one is a comedy horror.
Proper comedy.
The Tyler Corporation has finally figured out how to engineer a prehistoric raptor genetically. But they didn't stop there. They also made it invisible. Unfortunately for them, he's a really smart invisible raptor. After easily breaking out of its enclosure, it's now up to washed-up amusement park paleontologist Dr. Grant Walker and hapless loner security guard Denny Danielson to stop the predator before it wreaks havoc on the entire community of Spielberg County. With the help of local celebrity chicken farmer Henrietta McCluskey and Grant's old flame Amber, they uncover the truth behind the mysterious apex predator. This is 100% a comedy horror.
Oh, yeah.
And this is just a person that likes making movies, making a movie on whatever money he could.
Yes.
And he couched that. So Mike Capes was actually there. We bumped into him briefly at the bar after the movie. He brought his mum over to Glasgow with him to see the premiere. He did couch this by basically saying, how do you make a creature feature on no budget? Well, you make it invisible.
Yep.
There is no raptor in this movie, visibly.
Yeah.
And they do a good job with that.
They really do.
It is a fun, fun movie. Uses some gross out comedy, but not to the point where I thought it was detracting from the movie. Like, not like a scary movie would use gross out comedy.
Sure.
You know, there's a big pile of shit at one point, and it's done really well. Like, it's funny. It's like, actually made me laugh how they use that. It's a very, very silly movie.
Yeah.
And everyone plays their part very well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm right there with you on that. I think there's also a lot of great elements of nostalgia that he definitely incorporates into this film. The writer, Mike Capes, who also is the star of the movie, definitely, I think, was pretty self-indulgent with a lot of things, but they really worked out for me personally, because obviously I'm a fan of Jurassic Park. I'm definitely a fan of I think that Jurassic Park is, you know, it's easy to say it's very obviously based on any type of Jurassic Park, because there's a dinosaur involved in it.
I mean, the town's called Spielberg County. Yeah.
And there's a lot of like crossover between that and like Indiana Jones, and so that stuff's great. But it's done tastefully, and it's done in a way that I feel like only adds to the charming elements of the movie.
Yeah.
So I do think it's a charming film. I expected a little bit more out of it, because I think the hype, and I really liked the cover.
Yes.
And he gave a little speech prior to the movie, and I felt the same way as a lot of what he was talking about. But I think maybe with a little bit of a bigger budget, they could have really pulled it off really well.
Yeah.
But it was also in my top five as well.
Yeah. I would say an hour 52, it runs a bit long.
Agreed.
But yeah, I mean, this movie wears its inspirations on its sleeve.
Yeah.
But with reverence.
Yep.
It's silly, it's fun, and I'm with you. Like, I want to give this man some more money and see what he does with it.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
He made a really fun movie on basically no money.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to pull that out of the bag and have such an enjoyable experience is very commendable.
Absolutely.
Because even in the first like 10, 15 minutes, I was kind of like, right, is this going to be good? Is this going to be like just schlock?
Right.
But no, it uses, I think it uses its cast really well. It uses its celebrity cameo excellently.
Yes, very much
and
so.
And Sean Astin, Sandy Martin, arguably the second biggest name in it, who, again, I just adore.
Yes.
She's got such a talent for ridiculous comedy yeah. without you rolling your eyes.
And she's completely ridiculous in this.
Oh, yeah. Like, over the top ridiculous. She's just wonderful and a cranky bitch the whole way through.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, no, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Yeah, goes a wee bit too long, but not to the point where I was hoping the movie would end.
Yep, agreed.
Yeah. Terms of score, I'm now thinking that I might also drop my 7 for Soul Eater down to a 6.
Yep.
Because this, it's like I want to give it an 8, but there's just not enough there to give it an 8.
Yeah.
And I think it is a 7. And it's a very different 7 from The Deep Dark.
Mm-hmm.
They're just very different movies.
Definitely.
But this is a movie that you could sit down with some drinks and some friends and have a great laugh with.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like, it's definitely... I would argue that this is actually the first one of the weekend that I would say, yeah, go and look out this movie. Like... The others, if you see them and you want to watch them, excellent, you should. But this is the first one that I'm like, you'll have a laugh with this. You'll have a great time
yeah.
with this.
Yeah.
Like, just get some people together and enjoy yourself.
Mm-hmm. In
terms of score, what were you thinking?
I think that this one is a solid 6 for me.
A solid 6?
Solid 6 yeah. for me.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And like, and if I also, because I also think about like percentage wise, like a 60%. Yeah, I'd say that's about a 60%. And that's actually, that's being kind of generous. But I also, I don't know, horror comedies, I could take them or leave them.
Yeah.
A lot of times.
Because I do know you're, I remember, I think it was last year when I was telling you about the Fright Fest movies and you were, I mentioned, I think there was like 2 or 3 comedy horrors last mm-hmm. year and you were like, no.
Yeah, yeah.
And I get it, like, they're very hard to do and sometimes it's really not what you're looking for.
Yeah. And it's also, I feel like, and no shit talking on horror comedy, but I do feel like it's easier mm-hmm. to make a horror comedy than to just make a horror.
Yeah, definitely.
I've said it.
Yeah, oh yeah, I'm sure you'll ruffle some feathers with that one. Like for me, there's 2 types of horror comedy. There's like horror comedy like this movie, and then you get things like what you recently watched is Terrifier, which has actual laugh out loud moments.
Yeah.
But it's not a comedy.
But it is not a horror comedy.
Uh-huh. But it's not... I wouldn't even say it's a horror with, like, comedy like we talked about with The Deep Dark.
Right.
Like, that is a movie that tries to make you laugh.
True.
But it's not a horror comedy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the ones I prefer. The ones that, like, can make you laugh. But my God, this is a horror.
Yeah.
Horror comedies tend to be relatively middling or bad.
Yeah, that's pretty much about right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, in that regard, I think he did a great job in making The Invisible Raptor. I thought it was really good fun. It's not going to win awards, but it's won my heart.
Yeah, definitely. Music's fun too. Just a quick
shout out
to the music. It's very much John Williams-y type of score. Very, very much... I mean, on the nail, like the nail on the head. Like
yeah.
It's very, very, it's definitely not a live orchestra, but very good use of DAW and electronic instruments that pretty much sound like an orchestra, more or less. So.
Yeah, it's the music is kind of, it's in the same vein as the rest of the movie. It's mm-hmm. it's using its inspiration. It's doing it openly,
exactly,
but with
yeah.
reverence.
Yeah, exactly.
And again, that's hard to do when
yeah.
you're using so many different sources and different resources to not come across as hacky or like just ripping things off.
Yeah.
Like this movie was made with love.
Definitely.
And then our penultimate movie of the...
Of night one,
yeah. 8:45 was Wake Up, directed by Francois Simard, Anouk Whistle, and Johan Carl Whistle. From RKSS, the directorial collective behind Turbo Kid, Summer of 84, and We Are Zombies, comes a fresh take on the slasher genre, where classic adrenaline-fueled horror and Gen Z environmental issues collide in one twisted night from hell. A group of young activists set out to make a political statement by vandalising a home superstore as it closes, but their plan goes terribly wrong when they become trapped inside and must face a deranged security guard with a gruesome passion for primitive hunting. As the night fills with violence and terror, a desperate fight for their lives begins. Wake Up. So, I will say before we get into this, I love Turbo Kid. Mm. If you've never seen it, it's not horror. But it is
fantastic.
Brilliant movie. And uses Michael Ironside in a fantastic way. So I went into this one with high hopes. And those high hopes were quickly shattered to pieces.
I would say shat on.
Oh my god. Yeah, this is the first one where I just start to finish, I did not enjoy this movie. I did not think this was a good movie. I thought the concept was so paper thin, and
see, I thought the concept was okay, and it also had elements of what's the classic horror movie where they lock themselves in, like the department store.
I actually cannot remember.
It's like in, like it's J. Daniel's favorite movie, and she's a character from My Heart is a Chainsaw, which is a great book. I can't remember the name of the movie, but like it takes place in a department store. The kids lock themselves in it and party for the night.
Yeah,
and then there's a, you know, it's a slasher.
Yep.
Right. So this had elements of that. It's a good concept. I think it definitely probably was very much inspired by that to an extent, but took this different approach towards it. And I do like the idea of like isolation inside a department store. I like the idea of corporations that are very much shitting on everybody, and it's all about capitalism. And I understand the message. It's just the characters were insufferable. Mm-hmm. They were just so radically Gen Z in a bad way that it just... Ugh. If I was Gen Z and I saw this movie, I would have also hated those characters. I would have been like, Jesus fucking Christ, is that what I actually look like?
Yeah. Every character in this is so one note.
Yeah.
And it is, like you say, it's like, there's no one to root for in this movie.
No.
I you can't root for the killer. Like, he's not a nice person. Like, right.
I was rooted for him more than fucking kids.
But exactly, like, because if you have to pick someone, might as well pick the one that's picking off the people that are annoying you.
Yeah,
like, they are so one note. They are so like it's hard to miss the message in this movie because it's so blatant. There is no subtext. There is no. It is just corporations bad, but hey, we're gonna murder them. Like, we're gonna murder these people that are fighting against it. Like,
right.
It doesn't seem to really want to take a hard stand one way or another. It has the worst IKEA parody name I've ever heard in Home Idea. When I saw that, I literally groaned. Like, you could. That is the name you write down on the spec script before you think of an actual name.
Right.
It was just insufferable. Like, when a movie has a high stakes flat pack furniture building scene, what are you doing with your movie?
Yeah.
Like, and that happens, and it would, like, there's no tension in it. They want there to be, but it's just,
yeah,
it was, I didn't think the kills were particularly well thought out. They're not inventive. They're not particularly cool. Like,
yeah. It was a movie that was made because they could make it.
Yeah.
You know, we're just like, oh, fuck it. Let's just make this pile of shit.
Yeah, and it really was. And in fact, this movie was actually preceded by a short movie called Mouse, which is about a young woman who is walking home at night and gets followed by a creep. Mm. And she runs away from him and then, you know, manages to get to where she's going, quickly gets in, but the guy gets his hand in the door and manages to break in. And then the twist being that she's luring creeps to murder them in gruesome, gruesome ways. Mm-hmm. That 9 minute short was so much better than this 90-minute movie.
Yeah, 100%.
Mouse was genuinely so well done. The kills are, like, there are several kills in it because it reveals that she's done this more than once. Mm-hmm. And it shows the variety of ways that she has murdered these men. And they are so inventive and so striking at moments. Like, the bit where it cuts to the guy on fire is just spectacular.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we had to go and watch this movie, which was just dull and annoying and... Yeah, I genuinely did not have a good time with this movie.
No, no. In fact, let's move on.
I will after we give it a score.
Ah, see, you're gonna actually give it a score.
I am gonna give it a score because I can't only rate the good ones.
Right.
For me, it's a 3. Mm. I'm very much like you. It's very rare that I give something a 1, and it's very rare I give something a 10.
Yes.
Donald's talked plenty of times about how he's basically only given one movie a 10, and that's the thing. Because it's his favourite movie of all time, that's his 10. Because that's the what he wants movies to hold up to.
That's a 10, yeah.
We have given ones before on this podcast. We have given ones to Frightfest movies, and they were thoroughly deserved. This doesn't quite hit those absolute depths.
Right.
But this is not a good movie.
No.
It is competently made. You know, it's shot. It is, you know...
They use cameras.
you can see what is going on. Like, you know, it is a competently made movie in everything but its execution of its story and its plot and everything about it.
Yeah.
It's just, hey, we actually know how to make a movie. We just don't know how to make a good one.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, for me, it's a 3.
Yeah. And for me, because of the concept of it, because I did like the concept, I thought it would have been good. It just was poorly executed, and also because of the fact that, like, just like you said, they made a movie. It's a 2.5 for me.
Yep.
It's a 2.5.
Sure. That rounds down to a 2, so I'm happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I haven't seen many films that I would honestly say, like, there's no way I would ever watch that again.
You need to watch A Cloud So High. That was a movie from 2-3 years ago from Fright Fest that is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life.
So apparently I don't need to watch it.
No, I mean, as I always say, I like... one of the things I like about Fright Fest is the range of quality, because if everything's great, you have nothing to compare it to.
True.
If everything's mediocre, you have nothing to compare it to. I like having these hard swings.
Yeah.
I think they're genuinely needed. Obviously, that's not what the organisers are looking for. That's they are done through a panel, I believe, of four. The four people that you see standing at the front introducing the movies. And I think a certain number of them have to agree to put this forward. Once they see them. And it's also what's available, what's coming out, what can
it's
they
not
get.
Easy.
It's not. You know. And absolutely, like, this is... When I give a bad rating to a movie in this festival, there's never a dig at the people organising it.
No.
Because, one, people have different tastes.
Yeah.
You will always have that. But it's not easy. It cannot be easy putting together... horror, any film festival, any festival of any kind.
Definitely not, no.
This was our first proper bust.
Yeah.
This was just not a fun watch. And that moves us on to our last movie of Friday, 11:05. We watched Kill Your Lover, directed by Alex Austin and Keir Stewart. Dakota has had enough of her toxic relationship with Axel, but the feeling isn't mutual. As she tries to end things, Axel becomes something different, something monstrous. He gradually succumbs to the poison of the decaying relationship, becoming a creature with increased aggression, a touch that melts skin, and worst of all, he's contagious. But an uncompromising breakup film and a wild body horror shocker. Frightfest alumni and co-directors Alex Austin and Keir Stewart, apologies for getting that wrong the first time, debut feature roars with a punk edge, award-winning practical special effects, and soars via dynamite performances from newcomers Paige Gilmore and Shane Quigley Murphy. Now, I would say that this was the first movie that the people we were with were divided. I thought this movie was not bad. I thought that it was well done. I thought the performances were good. I just don't think that they went deep enough. It's a very shallow movie. But I remember you and friends of the show, Mark and Therese, coming out of this movie not particularly happy.
Yeah, it wasn't, no.
No?
It like, where Wake Up was also one-dimensional and terrible, mm-hmm. this was just kind of just a step a little bit above that for me. Mm-hmm. It's just, it was just... the literal physical representation of a toxic relationship, without going into too much of it, because mm-hmm. it's in the...
Oh, yeah, in the blurb.
You know, so... I don't know. It's just I like, they meant well with it, and I get it, and I've been in toxic relationships, and they feel terrible, and you don't know you're in them sometimes. So I get that aspect of it. It's just, I think the actor also really bothered me. He was just, I don't know.
I mean, he is a prick.
Yeah.
And he's meant to be a prick.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so from that point of view, it's great. He does a great job.
Yeah.
Looking like a rapist of some kind, because he just has that very, very patriarchal man fucking bullshit. So I don't know. It's a tough one.
It is. I would say one of the things that I did enjoy about this was that while a lot of the movie deals with Dakota's, you know, attempt to get out of this relationship, it does later on in the movie reveal that it is not a one-sided thing. Yes, he may be the worst one, but she is not innocent in this relationship. This is not a movie about an abusive relationship.
Yeah, they're just not bad together. They're not good together.
Yeah. And that realization that it's not him, it's us, but he's the one that's trying to, like, cling on to it and stick with it for no reason.
Right.
But yeah, it is so, like, here's your subtext straight on the screen.
Right.
We're just putting it right on there, including in the special effects, including in everything they say. It is a very shallow movie that wants to be a lot deeper than it is.
The dialogue is dreadful.
Yeah. The effects, I will say, were very well done. I enjoyed the way that he transforms throughout the movie. It runs 1 hour 20 and it feels longer.
Yeah, that's true.
Very small cast, very kind of bottle movie. Like, it mostly takes place in one flat.
Yeah.
It's a misguided attempt for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's not bad. It's just, I can see what you were going for, but I don't think you went far enough. I think you needed to actually sit and look at what you're actually making and delve deeper into it as a concept, rather than being like, how about a movie about a toxic relationship? Cool, go.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
That was it. Rather than having this deeper meaning, this... exploring the characters more, and that's probably my biggest strike against the movie. Is it is a movie about a toxic relationship between two people that they are basically the only two people in the movie, and they're still shallow.
Yeah,
absolutely. Like, you could have done so much more with these people.
Absolutely.
So for me, it's a straight 5. It's not good, it's not bad, it just is. I would like to see these directors go away and really delve deeper into what they want to do as filmmakers.
Yeah, and maybe not together.
Yeah, maybe not.
Because they're husband and wife.
Yeah, and that can be tricky. Sometimes that can work out amazingly in movies. I mean, you look at, you know, Peter Jackson and I can't remember her surname, Fran, his wife, who worked together on all of his movies. Like, she worked on Lord of the Rings. Like, husband and wife teams or relationship teams, whether that's, you know, in a couple or related brother and sister, sister and sister, you get those quite a lot in movies.
Yeah.
But that can really either help or hinder a movie.
Yeah. I'd be curious to see what they could do separate
from each other. Yeah. So yeah, for me, a 5. It's straight down the middle. It's nothing special. They need to try harder.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, 3.5 for me.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah, yeah. You all came out a lot sourer on that movie than I did, and I don't blame you.
It was also late.
Yeah, yeah. And you get grumpy.
I do. Yeah.
So that was day one.
Yeah.
We had 5 movies. I thought it was a decent first day. It was not amazing.
Yeah.
I think it was quite unfortunate that the last 2 movies were the ones we didn't enjoy.
Yeah.
Because that can, especially as you say, you've already watched 3 movies. It's getting later and later.
Yeah.
And then you have to sit through these other 2 movies that you aren't enjoying.
Right.
But yeah, it was an okay first day. I would say probably my favorite on the first day was Invisible Raptor.
Mm-hmm.
The Deep Dark being a close second. Those two were definitely the highlights for me in the first day.
Yeah.
But I think just Invisible Raptor was fun, light. Yeah. And
I wish they would have ended the night with Invisible Raptor.
I think that would have been a better choice.
I really, really do. I think that would have left everybody like in a higher mood, but I think also it may have been because of the time that it went on. I think the actor and the writer of the movie for Invisible Raptor probably wanted to speak earlier in the day, so who knows. But yeah, I mean I still enjoyed all of the, you know, all of the day.
Yeah, as always, it is an experience, and the fact that they do get these guests in really is cool. Fantastic. Yeah. The fact that these guests fly from around the world to come and chat about their movies, or whether it's, you know, the sound that they worked on, the script. You get a wide variety.
Absolutely.
And what was it, Kill Your Lover that had the
composer?
Was it Kill Your Lover that had the composer?
Yeah, it definitely was the composer that they also talked to, because they had like a panel.
Yeah, they had like 6 people.
Yeah, they had a panel of people. They're very proud of the movie, and they shouldn't be. But but yeah, the composer got up there and he went on about a passion project and how much he really enjoyed working on the film, and how this is very much the type of music that he would very much like to pursue. And it ended up being like a strange like Born Identity guitar.
It was butt rock.
Yeah,
but it was the butt rock ass butt rock that opened the movie that I genuinely laughed at. Because he, like, you know, you had 6 people talking, and he was the last one, and he went on about the same length as all of them combined.
He went on.
About how this is just such a passion for him, and how he's really, you know, looking to explode and blah, 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 blah. And then butt rock. Just the butt ass butt rock. It was the most like contrasted talk to music I've ever seen in my
especially
life.
Especially because he was last and then the music happened.
Yes.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. If he'd gone first, I probably would have kind of forgotten.
Yeah.
But my God. But yeah, so that moves us on to Saturday. So Saturday opens up at 10:30 a.m. With Mom. Directed by Adam O'Brien and arguably the biggest get for the weekend was Emily Hampshire, best known for playing Stevie Budd in Schitt's Creek, who stars in this movie. It was the first world premiere that we had of the weekend. The rest were UK or European premieres. Meredith is a struggling mother abandoned by her family and partner after the appalling death of their newborn son. Alone in her house after separating, she becomes more and more isolated, unaware that the death of her baby has caused the birth of something far more sinister. An entity conceived from tragedy that is determined to make make her relive over and over again the darkest moments of her existence and keep her family forever torn apart. A striking, provocative, and consuming psychological horror, anchored by an incredible performance by Schitt's Creek star Emily Hampshire.
See, I didn't even know that it actually says all that in the blurb because I went in blind for all of the films.
So I did the same, and I didn't know that because that's quite the spoiler.
Yeah, that gives everything away. Yeah, like going into it blind and not knowing what happens, I feel like was definitely a really good way to go into it. But yeah, this was a strong film. This was a very strong film.
And I've only seen Emily Hampshire in this and The Rig, which I enjoyed. The Rig, obviously, I enjoyed Schitt's Creek. It won every Emmy possible. Who didn't enjoy it? This was a big departure, even from The Rig, which is horror. The performance she gives in this, absolutely stunning.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Like, essentially this movie is about postpartum depression.
Yeah, postpartum, I'd say, psychosis.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and depression, psychosis, all wrapped up in a one, definitely. Because it's the psychosis that leads her into just kind of feeling and doing specific things.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, and much like you, I went into it blind. And we'll see. First 45 minutes is a baby crying, essentially.
The whole time.
The whole time, which is for both you and I are not exactly known for wanting kids or liking kids. That was rough.
Yeah, that was rough.
But it works.
No, big time. Yeah, like I wouldn't. Normally, if a baby was crying for that long during a film, it would be the type of thing where I would never watch it again.
Yeah.
But this is a movie I will rewatch.
Yeah.
Because it's just so good, and because the sound was done so well, including the baby, all of the sound, the sound design in general was done really, really well. But I think that actually just leads to it's there's so much tension involved with the sound and the baby crying particularly.
Yep.
It's a lot, but in a really good way.
Yeah, absolutely. Going into this blind and then having that moment where the baby dies hits hard. Okay. Like even for someone that like isn't wanting that, like having that moment and the way it's done is so striking, like so it's a gut punch.
Definitely.
I would compare this movie to like The Babadook.
Yeah.
In quite a few, like partly, the kid screaming for the first hour of The Babadook very much reminded me of it. But it is that kind of a struggling mother and how that's resolved or how it isn't.
So a lot of good social commentary there on what type of responsibility falls to a mother, what happens to a woman's identity after she has a child, just in general, like she just becomes a mom. And there's a lot of discussion in the film about she doesn't think she's a good mother. Mm-hmm. She knows she's really not a good mother. She thinks she's not a good mother. What does that mean? You know, she was trying so hard to be a good mom.
Yeah.
But, apparently she really thinks that the baby hates her and things like that. And there's a lot of social commentary and talk there as well.
Yeah.
About what happens to a woman's identity.
And also
how the husband deals with the whole entire situation.
So. Yeah. That's what I was literally about to say is like, what responsibility both as a father and a partner, does that man have? Only saying man in this because it was, but any part, what does the other parent have, the one that hasn't given birth physically, what responsibility do they have, like, to not just care for their child? You know, you can have that, like, you know, you can be involved while still not doing your part.
Totally.
Because it's not, like, he isn't a stereotype father in this movie. He is not the kind of person that's just like, it's her responsibility and she can go and do all this because I'm the man and she's the woman. He is involved, but he doesn't take on the responsibility he needs to as a partner for a woman that has just given birth. And they talk about it, the director was there,
right?
And he talks about how certain aspects of what she experiences and the way he reacts isn't necessarily exactly what might be happening. It's kind of left interpretation of, like, you know, very early on there's a moment where they get her water breaks, they go and have the baby, and then they're back at home, she's scrubbing the floor while he's holding the baby. And he talks about how that might not necessarily be what is exactly happening, but how she's perceiving it.
Right.
And there's a lot of that, of how interpretive certain aspects of it are. And it's such a... it's a very sensitive subject that I think is handled extremely well.
Yeah, I agree.
Literally my only fault in the movie is the ending, which I'm not going to spoil, but for me it seemed a very... the studio didn't really like the ending. Can you just get Emily back and shoot this one thing and then tack that on to the end? I think if it ended the way... and you know exactly where I'm meaning.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
That moment, that would have made it better.
Oh, yeah.
I think that adding that bit at the end just kind of peters it out rather than gives it this...
it dropped it a point for me.
Yeah.
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 Definitely.
For me, this one is an 8. It's an excellent performance from all involved, but Emily Hampshire really puts forward, like... it stands up with other great performances for me. Like, actual, not just like a horror movie performance, but she brings every single bit of emotion to that character. And without that, this movie doesn't work.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you on that. I give it a 7.
Yeah, so that's...
very respected 7.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. That might be... my highlight of the weekend.
Yeah.
I was a fantastic movie. It was awesome to see Emily Hampshire there. That does not affect the movie quality. Just a note. But yeah.
She's delightful.
Oh, yeah. And
just a cool person.
And the fact that she talks about how she's not exactly a maternal person that doesn't want kids.
Yeah.
And her experience throughout that movie was really interesting.
Made me like it even more.
Yeah. Yeah. It's... one of those ones where, you know, the special features add to the movie rather than just being a little fun extra.
Yeah.
That genuinely added to...
very much so.
The experience of that movie. Next up, second movie of the Saturday was The Funeral. This one is the Turkish one.
This is the Turkish one, yep.
Directed by Orkun Bayram. Semal, a lonely hearse driver, has been entrusted to secretly transport the body of a murdered young woman, Zeynep, to her parents' home at their final request. But he hears strange groans from the back of the vehicle during the journey, even though Zeynep hasn't got a pulse. As her body comes back to life, the moment he sets eyes on her, Samuel falls in love with the undead woman, so he must constantly feed her flesh by committing his own murders, even if it means dealing with the police forces attempts to capture a serial killer. This is a zombie romance movie.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Whether she wanted it or not.
So yeah, this is the kind of weird part about this movie that I struggle with, because I thought that the girl that plays Zeynep does an absolutely fantastic job.
Yeah, especially for a nonverbal role.
Exactly, yeah. And I actually, like, I enjoyed this movie. I thought that its concept was good. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was relatively well executed. There were just certain aspects of it I just found really, one, creepy, and two, lacking.
Yeah.
I came out of this movie basically saying that this is just a movie about how men will fall in love in a really odd, disturbing way with a woman that they know literally nothing about, yeah, and then obsess over it.
Absolutely, yeah. Which they do all the time.
Yes, yeah, no, it's, but they don't, but they don't do that in a way that talks about that. It's not, that is not what the movie's about.
Yeah.
And it could have been.
Yeah.
But instead they romanticize that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which makes it worse.
Yeah. I, no, 100%. Yeah. And it's, and in a way that, like, I don't think that was their intention, but that's really what I got out of that movie.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's, you can't watch the movie and not think, like, what the fuck's the deal with the director or the writer?
Yeah.
Like, why?
Like, he's clearly in love with someone that he knows nothing about. Yeah. Like,
and she's, like, unattainable.
Uh-huh.
You know? Much in the way that this character is unattainable because she's literally dead.
Yeah. Yeah. I did find that the performance of Samuel so one note. I didn't feel he really brought too much to the character.
He seemed so bored.
Yeah. The whole movie.
And I don't know if that's just like the vibe of what a Turkish
hairdresser
would be like.
With slight ties to the mob.
Yeah, but I don't think so. I think he was poorly casted. Yeah. I do. Just takes away from the overall performances of the film.
Yeah, because as you said, she's on a non-verbal role. She has no lines in this movie.
She steals it.
She steals that role.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Like, she puts forward so much emotion and, like, brings everything she has to that character. And then you have him who has all the lines, who is able to emote more.
Mm.
And she still manages to come across as more human.
Big time.
Yeah. Genuinely, her performance steals the show. It's fantastic. She deserves every role that she can land.
Yeah.
I would love to see her in more things.
I'd love to see her talk.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, it's a decent movie. It's just that it just seems misguided.
Yeah.
And that was a bit unfortunate, to be honest.
Yeah, because the shooting locations are cool.
Yeah, it's a well shot movie. Yeah. It looks, it's got some really great set pieces. I really enjoyed that final, without giving away too much, melee, in the large field.
Yep,
I thought that was really well done. But yeah, I just get this creep feeling from that guy.
Yeah.
Not the actor in particular, yeah, just this character, just yeah, the way that this character, what his motivations are, what he does after he decides on, I am in love with this woman.
Yeah.
It doesn't sit right with me. And to be honest, if you're looking for a better version of that, something like Let Me In or Let the Right One In.
Right.
I mean, the Swedish version is the superior one, the original, but the Chloe Moretz and Cody Schmidt-Mufi version is also extremely well done.
Right.
That movie is basically the same concept, but is done so much more tastefully and naturally.
Yep, yep.
So yeah, I think for me, this one's a 6. It just peaks over that, like, there are good aspects of it, but I can't give it any higher than that,
right,
due to just the uneasy feeling I get from what it is. And to be honest, it's mostly her performance that pushes that up.
Same. Yeah. I'm gonna give it a 4.4.
Okay.
Yeah.
I not recommend.
I mean, it's a one and done for me. Mm-hmm. You know, like, definitely watch it. It's definitely got great shots, good elements of it. In it, it's an interesting concept, but it has been done in different ways yeah. better.
I mean, Warm Bodies is even another one. And yeah. that's a very Hollywood version of this.
Right.
And
right.
I still think it manages to be a bit more smart and tasteful.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, it's a... Yeah, a bit of a misstep, but not to the point where I think it's terrible.
Yeah. No, I don't think it's terrible. I just think it's a little ridiculous.
Yeah. Then we come to our second polarizing movie of the weekend. 3:35, we went to see Custom, directed by Thiago Teixeira. The long-awaited first feature from award-winning Brazilian-born and UK-based filmmaker Thiago Teixeira, director of the acclaimed shorts Dogskin and Wrong Number. In this paranoid horror thriller, blurring the lines between death and sex, reality and fantasy, Jasper and Harriet are arthouse pornographers struggling to make ends meet. Their stock and trade is producing custom-made erotic films for an exclusive clientele into the forbidden, the shocking and the strange. As they hit rock bottom, that's when they encounter the audience, a mysterious client offering life-changing money to perform strange rituals on videotape. This one, I would say, was probably the most polarizing of the weekend. This is the one where I'll start saying, this was the horniest Fright Fest I have ever been to. because Kill Your Lover had some pretty graphic sex scenes, as in quite full on.
Yeah.
But nothing compared to Custom.
Yeah, Custom is...
Custom is... And it is a movie about two people making porn. It's quite hard not to do that. I actually thought this movie was well done.
Yeah.
I genuinely thought that the performances were... Literally in the first 2 minutes, I thought I was going to hate this movie.
Yeah.
But then as the movie starts unraveling, I thought that they actually handle this concept with a lot more care and a lot more tastefully than it could have been done. Than I have seen done in other movies that don't even delve into something like
especially
porn.
With the budget.
Yeah.
Yeah, because obviously it didn't have a huge budget.
No, I genuinely thought that you could make this movie and make it so badly, quite easily.
Yeah.
Like, it is not an easy concept, and it is daring for them to go ahead and do this.
Very much so.
It's not the best movie I've ever seen in my life. But I genuinely think that it uses its performances well, it uses its concept well, and leads some intriguing places.
Yep. I think for me, I had to kind of give it a little bit of time and thought after watching it. But I do feel like very much the same. It's very much, I feel the same way about overall concepts really good. I like the ritualistic elements in it and the occult elements in it. There's great social commentary in it. There's great acting in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it even, I mean, I think that overarching story is pretty solid there too.
Yeah.
It does get a little bit muddy from time to time.
Yeah.
But other than that, yeah, I think it's a solid film, I'd say. Especially like you said, for what it is, I think it was done well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that probably the ending is its weakest part. Kind of like, we didn't really know how to end this, so we just made an
which
ending.
Happens so often with horror.
Yeah. It's the hard thing, but I'm not looking for everything to be wrapped up in a nice, neat little bow.
Yeah.
It just seems that kind of way of like, we didn't really know how to end this, so we're just going to end it.
Right.
But overall, I genuinely thought that, especially Abigail Hardingham and Rowan Polonsky, which is the most unfortunate name
seriously.
I've ever heard in cinema.
He needs to change it.
Rowan Polonsky. Like, it's... This, by the way, this was not the director we all know and hate in a mustache, fake mustache, and going, hello, my name is Rowan Polonsky. Like, but genuinely, I had to double take when I first saw that name.
No, me too.
But yeah,
I wonder if he changed it to that
just to
fuck with people.
I mean, it would get you noticed.
I guess so.
But yeah, I'm kind of between a 6 and a 7 on this one. And it's difficult. I always refuse to do the 0.5 because if I'm doing, which I'm not saying you can't, just because if I'm giving something between 1 and 10, I'm going to give it between 1 and 10. I'm probably going to be kind, because I tend to be, and give it a 7 just because I feel that it was, because it is such a hard thing to do to make a acceptable and actually quite decent movie out of this concept.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give it a 7, but I would not fault anyone for any other score they gave it, because... Right. Yeah, it's very much, this is arguably the most up to personal taste movie of the weekend.
Yeah, no, very much so. And I think that just because it does something well doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, it's going to make my rating go one way or another.
Absolutely.
You know, because like, it's also, should this movie have even been made? You know, should it have? Should it not have? Yeah, that's kind of, you know, that's also a question that you can ask. But it was. And for the sake of the fact that it was made, performances were great, good concept, I'm giving it a 5.
Okay, yeah. That's totally fair. Yeah, the should this movie be made... I always admire people going for things that are harder to do.
Yeah.
And I will call them out when it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. But I feel that this one, for its foibles, mostly hits.
Yeah.
I
only bring up the question.
Oh yeah, no, and it's a question that should always be asked.
And I'll leave it up to the listeners to decide once they watch it if they feel like it should have or should not have been made.
Yeah. This is definitely not a movie to watch with your parents. Just throwing that one out there.
Yeah, just because it's just awkward. It would be awkward.
Yeah, yeah. It's horny. It's horny as all hell. Yeah. I do want to know how long it took her to get into that entire latex outfit, though.
Yeah.
Because, my God, it looked tight.
Yes, it did. Ouch.
Yeah. And then we move on to third movie? Fourth movie? Fourth movie of Saturday. 6:05, we saw The Well. Directed by Federico Zampagnoli, and our second big name of the weekend, Lauren Lavera, which if you've seen Terrifier 2, and she will be in the upcoming Terrifier 3, she was there for this premiere, and for her, this was her first time seeing the movie.
Yeah.
Which was interesting. But yeah, Federico Zampagnoli, the Italian Rob Zombie, director of Shadow and Tupa, Demon of Desire, returns to the extreme horror genre with a dark supernatural chiller starring Lauren Lavera. Fresh from her eye-catching lead role in the box office phenomenon Terrifier 2, she plays Lisa Gray, a budding art restorer who travels to the small Italian village of Sambucci, just outside Rome, to bring a medieval painting back to its former glory for a wealthy and titled client. Little does she know, she is placing her life in danger from an evil curse and a monster born of myth and brutal pain. I think it is a massive disservice to call Federico Zampagnoli the Italian Rob Zombie.
I totally agree with that. Yeah, because Rob Zombie makes shit horror movies.
Yeah, I mean, I have seen Rob Zombie movies that I have enjoyed. It is not the Halloween movies, I'll tell you that.
Definitely
one.
Not, no.
But
and those other movies, I don't even consider horror, that's why.
Yeah, it's more like... I got zero Rob Zombie out of this.
No, there's nothing Rob Zombie about this. This is giallo.
This is the fucking... most giallo movie I've seen in about 20, like made in 30 years.
Yeah.
And I loved it because my biggest, I can't watch giallo movies for the sheer fact that everyone is speaking their native language on screen and is dubbed over.
Mm-hmm.
That just, I can't, it just doesn't sit with me.
It fucks with me too.
I hate it. Yeah. It's not that I don't enjoy giallo movies in concept. It's literally that one fact.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
But this was in English.
This was all in English. If it was all in Italian, that would have been fine. It's not foreign language movies. It's this.
No, I get it. It's the disconnect
between the mouths and the sounds. Yeah, yeah. It's the same reason I will always choose subs over dubs. Can't do dubs.
Same. Yeah.
But yeah, this is the most giallo movie I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Other than giallo movies.
Other than giallo movies. Because, like, from the way it's shot, the way... I mean, it's set in a sleepy Italian town.
Yeah.
It's shot in a sleepy Italian town. And even through its concept, it is a giallo movie.
Yeah.
A young, beautiful woman goes to a town or lives in a town for a specific reason, and weird occult shit happens.
Yeah. The gore is giallo.
The gore is giallo. The performances are giallo. Yeah. The shots, the costumes, the everything about this movie is giallo. And I use that as a huge compliment.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
This movie... much like Invisible Raptor, but so different, uses all its inspirations on its sleeve, but to great effect.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I will, I really want to point out, I will say all the performances in this movie are very well done.
Oh, yeah.
They are so good. This might be one of the highest budget movies we saw of the weekend, at least in terms of the way it looked. I don't know that in terms of fact.
I remember her saying that it was the budget was not high.
Yeah, but to be fair, not a lot of the budgets of these movies looked that high.
Yeah, yeah.
This one tended to have a bit more grander scenery and bigger shots. Maybe a little bit more. Yeah, I don't know if that's getting picked up on camera. My cat's outside the door screaming. This one has a grander look to it than a lot of the other movies. I don't think the budget was huge.
No, definitely wasn't. She literally said it wasn't.
Yeah, so. Yeah. But the... oh my God, I'm going to murder her. But yeah, there is a character in this movie that could have been done so distastefully.
Mm.
It is a man who, upon first sight, you would have thought, okay, this is going to be a really bad portrayal of mental illness, and turns into one of the scene-stealing best performances of the movie. Yeah. Our second excellent performance with no lines of the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
He manages to make a disturbing and disturbed character without ever crossing that line into distasteful mental health.
Yeah, it's just fucked up.
It's just fucked up. Like, it reminds me more of a Resident Evil villain or a Evil Within villain. Like, yeah.
Definitely.
It's a brute that is just a monster.
Yeah.
But and I thought that was such a perfect line to cut.
Yeah.
But yeah, the gore in this movie is so fun and horrible, and I thoroughly enjoyed this movie.
Yeah.
It goes places. It really just takes its core premise and runs with it and doesn't stop running.
Yeah.
And even talking about custom, where they didn't really know how to end that movie. They knew what they wanted to do with this movie, start to finish.
Exactly.
This movie was fantastic.
Yeah.
And for me, this one sits at another 8.
Yeah.
This was just such a joy to watch. From just as a moviegoer perspective, and then from a horror movie lover.
Yeah.
This movie was just made with joy and love and... absolute gore and violence.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It was my favorite film of all of Fright Fest.
Yeah.
Definitely my favorite film. It's, everything from performances to just overall story arch, the way that, there's always a twist that happens. The twist is great in it too. Is definitely, it's an 8 for me. It's the highest grossing film of the night for me, or of the whole entire Fright Fest for me. So
Yeah. For me, it's between that and Mom.
Yeah.
And they're two very different movies.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, for me, both eights, and both are definitely ones that I would suggest people go and look out. Then we move on to our penultimate movie, All You Need Is Death, at 8:25 by Paul Dwayne. A young couple records and collects folk songs in rural Ireland, selling them to a mysterious rich buyer. When rumours of a song never before heard reach the couple, they find themselves in an uneasy alliance with a music professor to discover an ancient song, a taboo ballad that may end up unlocking some dark truth from the forgotten past that will alter all their isolated lives. Echoing the early work of Ben Wheatley and Peter Strickland, Paul Dwayne's ethnomusicology, Shocker, is one of the year's most unique, wild, eerie, and unsettling cautionary folk horror tales. Now, if you are a listener to the podcast, you may recognise the name of Peter Strickland. And if you've not watched Ben Wheatley's movies, Kill List and A Field in England are both definitely up there as must-watches. Kill List I recently bought on Blu-ray because I just wanted to own it. I adore that movie, and I can see the comparisons, but I don't think it lives up to what those directors have done.
Mm.
So it's an Irish movie set in Ireland. The director is the most Irish man I've ever seen in my life when he was discussing it. And I enjoyed it for the most part, but it is arguably the most disjointed movie of the weekend for me.
Yeah. It could have been so good.
Yeah.
Because the concept is fantastic.
Yeah.
Especially, I'm a composer. I went to school for... I got my master's in composition, and we did a lot of field recordings, and there's a lot of things that goes in, a lot of things that go into field recordings and ethnomusicology, and the concept is just really there, especially as far as like trad music. It really approaches like trad music in Ireland in a really, really cool way.
Yeah.
It's just, there's just something, and for a lot of the film, it's good and it's there. And then something happens about halfway through it, and it just kind of, I don't know, it loses a wheel, and it's just like kind of just going on one wheel instead of four, or instead of two. And it's just, I don't know what happens to it, but it ends up being a little more disappointing than I would have I thought.
Yep. So. No, I completely agree. I felt that this movie felt like it was written by two guys smoking weed in a room that go, and what if they were recording music? And then what if they were doing this? And rather than having a coherent plan throughout the whole movie,
right,
it just seemed like, and then.
Yeah.
And if you are writing your movie using the words "and then this happens," you're doing something wrong. For me, you need to have through lines. You need to have a scene to scene, set piece to set piece. It needs to make sense, and not every aspect of this movie did. Much like you, that first half is like gripping, not in a tension way, but in a fascination way.
Definitely.
The way they treat traditional folk music in Ireland is done really so well, and it pulls you into their fascination with it. And as you said, about halfway through, they kind of just lose the plot, and they are just then making a movie.
Right.
So yeah, it's unfortunate. I thought it was definitely a movie of two halves.
Yeah.
For me, it probably sits about a six, just because of that disappointment factor towards the end.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't really bring everything together.
Right.
At all.
Right. Yeah.
It's a shame because this is probably the biggest disappointment of the weekend, where it builds me up so much throughout the movie and then just drops it all.
Yeah.
And I just felt let down by the end of it.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Score for you?
I think also a five.
Yeah.
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 Just because the overall feel of the movie is really good, but it's just the way it's executed. Yeah, so.
Yeah. And we move on to our final movie, which our only American movie of the weekend, I believe.
Invisible Raptor.
Yeah, that's a very American movie. Yes. Last Straw, directed by Alan Scott Neill. Alan Scott Neill makes a vibrant directorial debut with a welcome addition to the canon of socially on-trend chiller thrillers. A rural roadside diner becomes the host of a maniacal killing spree, leaving young waitress Nancy to clean up the bloody mess. After firing the staff at her dad's diner, she covers the last shift of the night by herself. Little does she know, though, she is far from alone. The day is returning to haunt her, and when things begin to spiral out of control, she must fight for her life over one long night. This was a very interesting movie.
Yeah.
It really subverts expectations through most of it. And makes good use of flawed characters and your expectations of what characters are. Because, you know, our main star, she does not endear herself to the audience early on. And then the staff of the diner do, you know, you sympathize with them, and it kind of turns that on its head at a certain point throughout the movie. And I thought that this movie was a fun watch.
Yeah,
It could have just very easily been a straight up what you expect throughout that first half to just continue on. And be, she's trying to fight for her life against this or that or whatever. And then there is a hard point where this movie turns. And it turns hard.
Right.
And it does that turn very well.
Yeah.
I felt that this was really, really quite a smart movie. Yeah. And arguably, I would say one of the best soundtracks of the weekend.
Yeah.
It's got a very electronic soundtrack, and I love my electronic music.
Oh yeah.
And it also uses that to great effect throughout it. The kind of diner setting is
always good.
Oh yeah. It's a good, fun slasher movie that flips things. It does enough different to make it really worth its while existing. This could have easily just have been another one of those movies, and I think it does just enough different to warrant it to stand out.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I think all the characters were done really well. Particularly, she had a really strong performance as well. So, I think for me, it's definitely one of the stronger movies as well of the whole entire thing. So. I also was a bit tired at this point.
Yes. This was movie 11 of 11.
Yeah.
But it was a good one to end on.
Yeah, I think so too.
It kind of reminded me of VFW, which also ended one of the Fright Fests, in that it's not horror. It's a fun kind of action-y slasher.
Right.
And I think that's... You need something high energy like that at the end.
To pick it back up, yeah.
Because we could have picked two or three of these movies that if they were at the end, we would have hated them, even if they were good or whatever.
Right.
Just because of that fatigue that you do feel over 11 movies.
Yeah,
absolutely. So I felt that this did a really good job. For me, it's a 7. It leaves a couple of plot holes completely unresolved just for the sake of its plot, but not to the point where it was more just me being picky of like, wait, what about that thing?
Right,
like, it's
right.
Not that it doesn't satisfyingly wrap up its story. It right. does. It's just that they do a couple of things for the sake of the plot that end up they ignore towards the end of it. And that's not that bad a criticism, to be honest.
Yeah.
The rest of it is gory, fun, well-acted, smartly thought out. I will give this one a shout-out for that we don't see enough, is a character with Down syndrome that is a fully fleshed out character.
Yep.
He is like a brilliant character within the movie, and also the actor does an incredible job.
Yep.
And there's not enough of that.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
So yeah, what did you score wise?
I also gave it a 7.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Wow, that is the first one we've actually got the same score on. So yeah, overall, I wouldn't say it was the strongest Fright Fest I've been to.
It's the strongest for me.
It is, yes. but I am now 5 years in.
Yeah.
And that is, it's not to say I didn't enjoy the weekend. I just felt that mostly it was a relatively middling. There are some high points, there are some low points.
Yeah.
But usually you get a good kind of wavelength throughout it, where you get ups and downs and like, oh my god, this one was fantastic, and this one was like absolute trash.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even the, like, yeah, The Well and Mom for me were the two highlights.
Yeah.
Wake Up, easily the worst movie for me. Mm-hmm. I did not enjoy it. Yep,
same.
But the rest kind of just hit that kind of middle ground.
Yes, exactly.
And that's not... That happens. Yeah. You know, especially in horror, it's hard. Like, horror's hard. The reason I love horror and the reason I do this podcast is because I find horror harder than any other genre to actually do well.
Oh, yeah.
I would say, like, comedy's hard, but you can make people laugh. Making people scared is hard.
Absolutely.
And it's easy to do jump scares. It's easy to just throw in X or Y to make your movie scary, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
But to actually make good horror is very difficult.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it was a relatively, it was an okay Fright Fest for me. Mm. But as always, I have a great time. I always find it wonderful that this gets put together by that panel. I'll be back next year. Will you be as well?
Oh, do you think 100%.
this is you in?
Oh yeah, that's me. That's me locked in for sure.
Yeah. And do you have any highlights, lowlights, any extra comments you want to throw in before we wrap this up?
I think that everybody should watch The Well.
Yes.
It's so good. And I think that Lauren is definitely one of the next upcoming Scream Queens.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
I look forward to seeing what she does. Hopefully she does more horror. I know she probably wants to do other things, but hopefully she does more horror.
Well, we've got Terrifier 3 to look forward to. She is in that. I'm sure she does. She did actually talk about that slightly at the thing that, because, you know, being a Scream Queen or being typecast in any role can be difficult.
I'm sure.
Also, having that label, especially as at a young age, to have that kind of be, hey, you know, we see you as this, like, higher echelon of actresses or actors within these movies, is really, I think she's earned it.
Yeah.
And I look forward to whatever she's in, because she's
good.
She's brilliant.
She's good.
Yeah. Same with Emily Hampshire. She's done, obviously, a fantastic job in Schitt's Creek. I really enjoyed her in The Rig, and she really shows off her range in Mom.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to see her expand, do any type of movie, to be honest. She's proven she can do comedy, drama, horror. And I think that there should be casting directors grabbing at her for that. Well, thank you so much. It's been long overdue for coming along. And
thank you for having me.
Yeah,
it's been fantastic.
And thank you as well for putting together our music. Finally get to do that on record.
Yep.
We'll hopefully have you back again. But for now, I will go and try and find the caravan and whatever Donald's parked, because, yeah, we need to get back to Asia, and that's going to take a wee while. So, yeah, thanks all, and we'll see you next time.
See you.